So hello everyone, this is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we are here for our NEPT case study call for November, and we have a couple of case studies set up, one for Susan and one for Violaine, and we're going to be doing screen share, so you should be able to, even on the replay, see this because we are recording, which is exciting. I think we're ready to go. So, Susan, thanks for submitting your case. And let's just go. You have a lot of pieces to it, so I want to make sure that we leave time enough to go through it all. Okay? So, this is Susan. This is a case on herself, 5 foot 410 pounds, yoga teacher, patient advocate, wellness coach, married, no children. She is got autoimmune, Hashimoto's, recent markers for C3 and C4, SDL positive, looking for hormone balance, concern about Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, which both run on her side of the family. Her mom had Hashi's undiagnosed for many years. By the time she was in, her antibodies were over 1,500. Holy cow. Are your antibodies that high, Susan?
No, actually, they range anywhere from 13 to 38.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so yours are under control, but 1,500, holy cow.
Yeah.
So main health challenges, asthma as an infant, ongoing colds, so illnesses and stuff as a kid, appendectomy as a teenager, whiplash, severe viral infection, which led to monitoring of the autoimmune, given puffers for the asthma, heavy bleeding, fibroids, given birth control pills, 2011 emergency room with chest pain, follow-up, everything was normal. So they never really figured out what that was, Susan?
No, the GYN, a new GYN whom I'd seen about a year later, felt that it was pericarditis, I mentioned, or costochondritis. I had done some research, and she said that that was a very common symptom in perimenopausal women.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've never had a relapse of it or a repeat of it?
No, I mean, it kind of lingered for about a year. I was given 500 milligrams of ibuprofen to control the pain. But yeah, it's pretty much gone now.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get any adjustments for that? Chiropractic adjustments, osteopathic?
Yeah. I've had a lot of chiropractic work. That's helped quite a bit. But you know, what exacerbated it was back bending and twisting. So I had to really take it easy with that. And even now, if I do a rigorous back bending practice, it'll come back a little bit. So I have to be very careful.
Got it. And then you went again with palpitations in 2012, diagnosed with PVC, stress echogram was, echocardiogram was normal. You've had a lot of stuff going on here.
Yeah.
September 2013, emergency room with pain in the left kidney, CT scan, no findings, pain went away. So a lot of stuff that seems serious.
Yeah.
But it checked out and then nothing shows.
Right.
Okay.
I called it the singing frog.
The singing frog?
Yeah.
So, hormone replacement therapy in March 2014. And what led you to that? Was there some testing done, or are you having hot flashes and perimenopausal symptoms?
By that time I was having some pretty strong perimenopausal symptoms. I was having flushes, night sweats, mood swings, and I'd met a woman on a holiday, actually, who told me about her bioidentical hormone therapy and how it had really helped her. And so when I came back, I sussed out a practitioner here who prescribes bioidentical hormones. And at the time, I was unwilling to go on any estradiol. I really was just looking for a stronger progesterone because I had experimented with over-the-counter progesterone, and that seemed to help. You know, I came out of, I entered perimenopause having been on the pill prior to that for 3 years, and then I had fibroids. So it, you know, I really think those 3 years being on the pill kind of whacked me out going into perimenopause.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could be. But you did end up going on the estrogen anyway. You got the bias.
Yeah, I was on a baby dose. I was on like 0.25. I inched up to 0.5, and now I'm on 1 milligram.
Do you know if it was an 80-20 or 50-50?
80-20.
80-20, good. Okay. Saliva test indicating low adrenal function, February 2014, discovered the thyroid antibodies.
Right.
Thyroid. Were you symptomatic or was it discovered? Oh,
totally. Yeah, I was totally symptomatic. I mean, you know, I was having body pain. The reason why I ordered the saliva test was because I'd done research online and started to take my basal temperature in the morning. It was 96 degrees. So then I ordered the saliva test and, of course, discovered the adrenal fatigue and hadn't yet quite put adrenal fatigue and hypothyroid together. But hypothyroidism runs in my family. So I was really looking for those markers. And yeah, I had body pain. I had, you know, aches and pains. I had a lot of fatigue. Definitely, was 30 pounds heavier. Yeah, you know, the classic symptoms.
Okay. Okay. And were those symptoms resolved or curtailed doing the thyroid medication?
Yeah, in a big way.
Okay. Got it. So they actually worked. And they're continuing to work, or have you plateaued and had to raise the doses?
I'm at a really good dose right now. I couldn't possibly go any higher because I'm right at the top of my free T3 range. Mm-hmm. And I do have a suppressed TSH from what I have understood. Obviously, the doctor is concerned that I have a suppressed TSH. But what in my research natural desiccated thyroid, that it does tend to give a suppressed TSH. People tend to have that response to it, and I'm not quite sure why. I'm still trying to find that out. But yeah, I function at my best when I'm at the very top of my free T3 range and with a suppressed TSH.
Okay. Yeah. And most people with the thyroid medication are going to have a suppressed TSH because the pituitary doesn't have to bother stimulating the thyroid.
Okay.
Because you've got the thyroid levels where it wants to be, so it's suppressed. Mm-hmm. The problem with that, though, is if you're wanting to get off, say you don't have your thyroid still is perfectly good, and you're trying to teach it how to produce better, having long-term suppressed TSH is not a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're on Cortef. So you keep working downwards on that. Are you rechecking your adrenal?
Yes. I just did some saliva testing because this new GYN we had a battle over whether to do a Dutch or a ZRT saliva test. So we threw in the cortisol with that. And I didn't take, she told me not to take the cortisol, before testing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't, to see, you know, where I'm sitting naturally without the Cortef.
Okay. And how many days did you go without it?
I went 24 hours without it.
Okay. So not a long time. And did you feel any difference in that time?
I haven't gotten the results back yet.
But did you feel in your body different? Oh, that
well, no. You know, this is the thing. I'm really feeling, yeah, I have to be off of it for about 3 or 4 days before I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can miss my Cortef for a day or two and not really notice the difference.
Okay. Okay. So I'm just going to pull out of in connecting with you to connecting and talking about what we're going. See, as they give you information, you want to go deeper. You want to find out why. You want to find out what it's been doing. You want to find out what each of the things that the person's taking are actually doing. Like, is it helping? Is it not helping? How long does it take for it to wear off, et cetera? Now, you weren't the one. Somebody I spoke to came on one of the first calls and was on testosterone. Oral testosterone. It wasn't pellets. It was oral testosterone, right? So you're still taking the oral testosterone.
No. Back on that call, I was on an oral estrogen, and it had skyrocketed my estrone levels.
Right.
But that's all come back to normal.
Okay. So you're no longer on. No, you're
no longer on the oral version. I'm on drops. And I've never taken oral testosterone. I've always taken transdermal.
Okay, so the drops are transdermal, so it's like an oil-based drop.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, got it. Maybe it was somebody else I was thinking about that was on oral testosterone and estrogen, and I practically freaked. Okay, and you're taking niacin. You're also taking Udo's and InterEcho probiotics, zinc, methylcobalamin. Do you know what the dose on your methylcobalamin is?
Not off the top of my head. It's the Garden of Life brand. It's the spray bottle.
Okay.
My husband's just going to go grab the bottle. Two things I forgot to put in that list, by the way, is vitamin D. I take about 2,000 IU a day, as well as 400 milligrams of magnesium. What is it? Magtine? What's the name of that brand? Anyway, it's called Magtine. It's a magnesium.
Okay. So magnesium, and then you're also taking the K. I see that there.
Yeah.
Okay. So pretty good. You said you're mostly gluten-free. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I've been working on it, and it's getting to the point where when I have it, it feels weird in my mouth. And when it feels weird in my mouth, I think about what it does to my gut. So it seems to be working, my weaning off the gluten.
Okay, so you're weaning off slowly. Is there any reason you don't just go cold turkey? What happens if you go cold turkey?
Well, what really got me off the rails was when I went to Turkey and Italy. It's quite hard to go off gluten there because actually the food is quite good. And, you know, you can get, like, everything's good there. It's easy to go off of it here. You know, I just have to stay off of it when I travel or when I'm tempted.
Right, especially with antibodies and especially with that in your family, with your mom having 1,500. Yeah, really, really important. Okay.
The B12, by the way, is 500 micrograms.
Okay, that's one spray, and you're taking one spray or two.
Yeah.
Okay,
one.
Just one. So 500. Okay, good. We'll keep that in mind as we go through your genetics. So you occasionally have non-GMO corn chips, raw milk, Parmesan, organic chocolate, Prosecco. Is that like a wine or something? What's Prosecco?
Yeah, it's like an Italian champagne.
Two glasses a weekend. Okay. All right. Toxic exposures, industrial chemical. Okay. None. Okay, good. Okay, so labs. We're going to look at your labs. Recent discovery just below range plus high scleroderma, again, just above range. How long ago did you first get the scleroderma showing up?
You know, I just had that lupus panel run about 2 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the ANAs have been how long? That's just then? You didn't have it before?
You know, when I go back to a previous lab in February 2014, I had a positive ANA then. And so there's two ANAs. One just shows up as a positive negative, and the other one shows up as a high number. So each time it's been positive and 1.80 as the high number.
Okay.
So, you know, creeping around, kind of not significantly high, but enough to indicate.
Oh, enough to indicate there's definitely autoimmunity going on here that needs to be affected. And, you know, the gut is a big time. Rash all over body, fever.
And did you see that I'm taking low-dose naltrexone as well?
Oh, I see it. I just see that right now. And what was that prescribed for?
Because I have autoimmune in the family, and my started with my sister, who has had RA for years and then got ulcerative colitis. Her private doctor weaned her off methotrexate and put her on LDN, and she's doing really well. And he put me on that when I started to have thyroid antibodies, suggesting that because there's autoimmune in the family, I may as well start taking the LDN.
Okay, so 4.5. Did he wean you up at 1.5 and then 3?
Yeah. Yeah, he titrated me up.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like you're exercising, you're spending time outdoors, you're taking time to relax, you're a yoga teacher. Hopefully that's true. You know, just part of the job. You're drinking greens, you're eating vegetables, you're still drinking alcohol, caffeine. So these are two habits that are going to affect your gut. And so while you're healing your gut, probably not a great idea.
Yeah.
Same thing with the gluten, right? So getting off the top allergens, and really, I would really focus on a leaky gut protocol if I was in this situation, and just like do it solidly for 30 to 60 days to really give it a chance to heal.
Okay.
Okay, so let's look at some of your numbers because it looked like you had some genetics. Let's see. So I have a genetic genie. I have a live wello. I think I have an MTHFR support. I've got, what's this one?
There should be metabolic.
Prometheus. Okay. And then I have stratagene. And yeah. I think this one's metabolic healing. Oh, what the heck happened there? There's the metabolic healing one. Okay, got it. Okay, so we've got all of those. So let's take a look at some of your genetics. Let's see, that was you. I like to start with these basic ones. Okay. And we'll flip back and forth to, let's see if I can find them. Ah, here they are. Okay, good. Yeah, so you've got, so the way I would look at this, if I'm going through this with a client, you're not going to memorize all these. Good luck if you do, if you have a photographic memory. I'm envious, but I don't have these memorized. I mean, I've seen enough of them over and over. I usually start by going through the homozygous. You've only got one, and it's a 1B1. You've also got a heterozygous on 1B1. So we're going to open up this document, which is on, what's that feeling? Let me see. Oh, there it is. There's the methylation. My screen keeps doing weird stuff. And a detox. Okay. Yeah, so basically, I would take those, look it up. So you're 1B1, you've got both a homozygous and a heterozygous, so clearly that's one that you want to be watching for. Affects caffeine metabolism, so you really shouldn't be doing caffeine. And estrogen metabolism. And it can be causing an upregulation of the 4-hydroxy, which you were very smart to try to get the doc to do a Dutch test so you could see what your hydroxy, 4-hydroxys and 2-hydroxys and all the ratios are, right? So super important, not just because of autoimmunity, but because of the risk of estrogen-sensitive cancers, in particular, you know, breast and ovarian. So this is an important thing. And I think that, you know, really looking at that caffeine and weaning yourself off, do a leaky gut thing and try not to go back on it is going to be very helpful for you for your overall metabolism. So, you know, the big mistake I think a lot of docs do with just looking at the blood without actually looking at the metabolites is that they miss this sort of thing, right? Miss it. It might look okay. It might look like it's in a safe range, but if the ratios are off, it's not really. So that's that. And then if we go back to this one. No, that's Elaine's trying to get back to where we were, MTHFR.
Are you going back to genetic genie?
I'm trying to.
Okay, that's to the left. You were just on it a moment ago. I think it might be that one. Not that one. Oh, yeah, there. You were just on it.
Dad, but that's not yours. That's Elaine's.
Oh, sorry.
I must have closed somehow. Let's see. Okay, there's your metabolic healing. There's your strategy, and there's your Prometheus. There's your MTHFR support. There's your live well. You boy went to town on these. That's great.
I sure did.
There's your
support. Oh, there's mine, yeah.
Phew. Okay. So the other ones are all homozygous, or heterozygous. So you've got a 1A2. So I would, the same thing, I'd go back here and look at, I have too many windows open and not enough space at the top to be able to see them all. Oh, Lord. This is driving me nuts. Okay. There we go. It was all the way at the beginning. Okay. So what did we say? It was a 1A2, right? Again, we've got caffeine metabolism and estrogen metabolism, right? So okay. Typically as I'm going through these, I'll print one of these forms out or I'll do it online. And then I just make that yellow, make that red, so that when I'm going back through, I can really kind of pull it all together. So that's what I would do. So you definitely, the caffeine is an issue for you, and maybe it's time to move to green tea. Okay, so let's go back here, and your genetic genie one.
You're breaking my heart.
I know. Don't go back in my heart. 2C19 and 2D6. So we go back over there. So C19. Coumadin, not a big deal unless you're planning to be on Coumadin. And then you just look it up. Whenever there's ones that are related to drugs, I always talk to people about, make a list, have this thing. Like if you ever go to the doctor, make sure that they're not going to put you on these. Same thing with the 2D6, lots of medications, including ones here. I don't think anything you're on right now, because you're just on hormones right now. Naltrexone isn't on any of these lists, but certainly is a good thing to look at, so you keep those things in mind. Mm-hmm. I'm going back over here. Where are you? There we go. And then the only other one you have is, the E1, 2E1. And NAT2. So 2E1 and NAT2. NAT2 is acetylation, which is a phase 2. 2E1 is alcohol. I am definitely breaking your heart today, girl. Okay, so you're not, those things are not things that you're going to be as efficient at taking care of, so why stress these out? Now, if you also like to wear nail polish and take it off, there's the acetone, right? Yeah. Be careful of anesthetics, ethylene glycol. I mean, you're probably not doing any of these. Nitrosamines, right. Be careful of secondhand smoke, but definitely the ethanol, alcohol is a biggie, so the wine and the thing. That would at least just, make the plan to do it for a while, to do a leaky gut repair and really get your system up to snuff. And then, maybe an occasional here or there as opposed to the everyday thing.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
That's where I would look there. So let's look at your other piece, which is, the other one is, where'd your MTHFR? Here we go. Now that's MTHFR sort. Did you do the genetic genie with the MTHFR? I'll have to look to see if I missed that one. I tried opening all of them.
I don't think so. I did strategy and MTHFR support, but the genetic genie.
Two at genetic genie or just one at genetic genie?
Just one genetic genie. The very brief one that you just went over is all.
Okay, because they also have one that's just the methylation, and it's a brief methylation compared to the other, and I like it better, to at least start there. Let me just double check and see. Susan, Jeanette, yeah, you just have to detox, not the other. Okay, so we'll just do a quick look through. The MTHFR one is 49 pages, so it's always hard to tell. So some of these are the same. We're not going to go through that page because it's all the CYPs. Phase 1 liver detox. And I forgot to look at the NAT2 to go over that, because this is acetylation pathway, and it's also related to some medications as well. NAT2, here you go. Various drugs, but also, exhaust fumes, tobacco smoke. So just being careful around those things, shutting your car door. Don't shut your garage door right away if it's attached. Let the car breathe out instead of back in, because you're going to be higher risk. And, cruciferous vegetables, making sure that you're doing plenty of cruciferous vegetables, if you tolerate garlic and onions and things like that for phase 2 acetylation.
Okay.
Okay. The other ones here are some of these I don't. DAO. Okay, so DAO breaks down histamine. So I don't know if you have any trouble with sauerkraut or other kinds of foods that contain histamines. But if you do, then it's certainly an issue with that. Are you guys seeing my screen, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah, so DAO.
How does that manifest itself? I mean, I can have sauerkraut quite fine, but are you implying that it could cause some itchiness?
Yeah, if you're eating certain foods and they're causing itchiness, just because you have the gene doesn't mean it's manifesting, right? So. Uh-huh. If you do, then, antihistamine type herbs, quercetin, high-dose vitamin C can be helpful. It's just a particular enzyme that helps to break down the histamines.
Okay. So
it just means you might be more subject to that that response.
Okay.
Okay. FUT2, you got a couple of these. You just have one. I have six, or I have all of these. Homozygous, but this basically is FUT2 is related to how you secrete your blood type into your mucous membranes. And what that means from a gut standpoint is that you would have a tendency to need more bifidus than normal. You don't make as much, or you don't feed the bifidus because they feed off of those antigens. You also, it has an issue with vitamin B12, so you just have to keep that in mind. So I have six of these. I have all of these FUD2s. I think maybe all but one, but there's another one that's maybe not listed here. But I know on the metabolic healing one, it showed up at six of those for me. So I got to really be careful. It explains why I had so many gut issues when I was younger before I started eating well.
Okay.
Glucose 6-phosphate deficiency. This one, I'm not exactly sure of the meaning on this one, the clinical significance on that. You've got one hetero. You've got these GADs, which is glutamic acid decarboxylate. You've got a bunch of those heterozygous, means that you're not as efficient at taking glutamate and converting it to GABA, so it might lead to anxiety when things get tough, when things get stressed out. Do you notice that for yourself?
Yeah,
or that you can get overwhelmed easily, or that you tend to want to be real perfectionistic about things and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah. This is related to glutathione S transferase, and there's different variations on it. Glutathione is the key antioxidant. So keeping that in mind, you want to make sure that you're eating foods that can easily convert to glutathione. If you're in a stressful situation or exposed to a lot of oxidative products or under a lot of stress, you might look at something like NAC or liposomal glutathione, et cetera, to help you with that particular one. And that could support you. Given that you have all this autoimmunity, that might not be a bad idea.
Is there any particular kind of liposomal glutathione that you can recommend? I recall having one about a year ago, and it really tasted like shite.
Oh. Seeking Health, I've taken it. None of the liposomals taste especially good.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can try that. You can also go for precursors if you can't tolerate the taste. So NAC and acetylcysteine can be helpful in helping you to make more glutathione. It doesn't always work for everybody, but it certainly can be helpful. Topical glutathione if you can't tolerate the liposomal. Apex has a cream that has topical glutathione in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
These are in the methylation pathways. I'm looking to see where your MTHFR. I think that's on another page. This is receptors, SLC. That's a folate receptors. So you may need higher than normal levels of folate. We'll see what your folates are. But you've got a lot of different folate receptor SNPs. So that's important to note. This is related to sulfur. Let's see what else. Aldehyde. Yeah, and again, acetaldehyde is the metabolism of alcohol, plus yeasts produce it. So you've got quite a number of heterozygous SNPs there. So just again, along with that CYP, I'd say probably alcohol in your healing phase is not a good idea.
Okay.
Okay, so here's some of them. Remember we talked about the shortcut through the middle of the pathway? That's the BHMT.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got just one heterozygous, so probably that shortcut's pretty open. CBS is down from homocysteine, so BHMT is upstream from homocysteine and helps convert the homocysteine up to methionine. CBS is downstream, so it helps convert the homocysteine down into sulfur and eventually to glutathione. So that could cause an impairment. Some people are upregulated, meaning that the enzyme is actually increased, and some are downregulated. It's not a really easy way to know unless you start testing all the metabolites, which I rarely, if ever, do.
Okay.
Usually look at that as being something to keep in mind. If ever you find that you don't tolerate sulfur very well, it could be that that's upregulated and it's pushing too much downstream and you're getting a buildup of sulfur.
Okay.
You find that, like with garlic, onions, and sulfur-containing foods, that there's a problem?
No, not with garlic and onion, but, for instance, dried apricots.
With the sulfur added? Yeah, sulfur dioxide, yeah. A lot of people get that. Okay, yeah, so that might be related. And I think as long as you stay away from those sorts of things, right? You're talking the pretty yellow dried apricots that have sulfur dioxide out to them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I would stay away from the sulfured whole foods, but I wouldn't stay away from the healthy forms of sulfur unless you actually react to them.
Okay.
Yeah. You've got a heterozygous MTHFR677T. Plus with some of those other folate receptor issues. Here in 1298C looks, where's your 1298C? Where's the 1298C? Ah, there it is. And that one's good. So you just have the one heterozygous. So, you know, your folate. I'm looking to see what your COMTs are. I don't think we saw those yet. Those would be on the neurotransmitter page, to see whether you have to be careful about supplementing. If you have homozygous COMT, catecholamine O-methyltransferase, then you want to be really careful about over-methylation. You got to go slowly.
Okay.
Groups. MTRs, you got a bunch. So B12, given that, and the one homozygous FUT2, probably some issues with the B12 that you got to be really careful to make sure you have enough of.
Okay.
You've got quite a number in the area of the B12. Yeah, a lot. Quite a lot. You've got more heterozygous than you've got normal.
Okay.
Even coming down here.
Hence my instinct to take B12.
There you go. Yeah. And so if you tend to feel like if you take too much B12 in the methylated form, you get anxious, then take some of it in a hydroxy or adenosyl form.
Okay.
And adenosyl is actually really gets into the mitochondria more quickly, so sometimes it energizes people.
I'm sorry, how do you spell adenosyl?
Adenosyl, A-D-E-N, A-D-E-N, Y-S-L, I think something. Google is good. If you type it in, it'll correct.
Okay.
So, I always get messed up with my spelling. PEMT, which you've got a homozygous and several heterozygous, has to do with phospholipids. And phospholipids have to do with myelination in brain. So it might really serve you well to be focused on getting things that have the phospholipids. Phosphatidylcholine or inositol as a supplement, or the lecithin, so sunflower lecithin, soy lecithin. I tend to like sunflower lecithin because we can make sure it's not GMO and all. You never know with supplement.
What was the one before the lecithin?
Yeah, it's the phospholipids. So these are related, all the PEMTs are related to phospholipids. So phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylserine, phosphatidyl inositol.
Okay.
Yeah, I would be careful about taking phosphatidylserine. I haven't seen your adrenal test, so I don't know where you're at, but if you truly have low cortisol levels, you gotta be really careful taking phosphatidylserine because it can lower your cortisol levels. We use it a lot with people in stage one or hyperadrenal. Or if they're in trouble, that's a good thing for phosphatidylserine. If somebody's having trouble falling asleep and then you do an adrenal test and find out that they're, you know, right before bed, cortisol is high or even higher, you know, it may not even be super high, but just higher in comparison to the rest of the day. So like say you're low, low, low all day, but at the end of the day, it's close to the higher range.
Right.
And that's, you know, by comparison, the body's going, oh, time to be awake. And the phosphatidylserine can be really good to dampen the cortisol effect then.
Oh, great. Cause my mom has that.
Oh, does she? Yeah.
Yeah.
It might be a good thing. And she probably has, she has at least a homozygous on this PEMT634A because you have a homo.
Yeah.
So you gene from her and the others you might have gotten from her or from your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sulfur, again, it's, you know, it's pointing to just watching that sulfur metabolism, CBS. We looked at these. Some of these are repeated. They just put them on different pages, the sulfation pathway now. So let's look at the neurotransmitters. You know, a few in the aldehydes, which we looked at before. Yeah, you do have a COMT.
Yes.
So like the other, let me just look at my other chart. Here we go. So the 158 and the V158 and the H62. Let's go back. Okay. Here we go. So which one?
T26501G.
Yeah. So you've got a heterozygous on the 158.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you're homozygous, so I don't think you really have to be so careful. This one, you know, again, the reason I don't like using the MTHFR for the summary, I'd always recommend doing the methylation and the detox at genetic genie because they pick the most clinically significant. But we'll look again. We'll look at the one from Stratagene as well, and that'll pull some of this together. Woo-hoo, I'm not sure what these are. These are all in the neurotransmitter pathways, and I haven't studied all of these, so I don't know what these DDCs are or whether they're clinically significant either. They're not listed in Ben Lynch's as clinically significant. He'd report on them. MAO, you know, again, you're heterozygous, but that would tend towards, it's the monoamine oxidase, and it would have to do with having higher levels of anxiety or, you know, dopamine not being properly broken down, metabolized. Nitric oxide we looked at, so some of these we looked at already. The ones I want to look at, yeah, we talked about that one already. We talked about, the ones I want to look at are related to the vitamin A. That's the ones that don't show up necessarily on the others. Some of these, again, are repeated. They're just in different places. Haven't been able to get a lot of answers as to what all the cannabinoid pathways mean. But you've got a lot of SNPs there. And I don't know if it means that you would be more sensitive to cannabinoids. You know, some people will, you know, go out and have a little tiny bit of pot and they're out of it, and other people are they tolerate it. I'm not sure exactly what those mean. I haven't studied those very much. APO, this is what I like to look at. Oh, awesome. You're in APOE22, which is the best APOE configuration. So that puts you at lower risk of Alzheimer's and cardiovascular disease. So that's good. That's here. If you had this 4 and it was a red, it was a homozygous, that's a 4-4, and that's at the highest risk of Alzheimer's and cardiovascular disease, and have to be real careful about saturated fats and all, but you're in a good space with that. So that's good.
Okay.
Yeah, very good. Let's see what else we have here. Again, I don't know all of these. Someday I will, but CD14. Now, that I'm not sure about, and I wonder, maybe we can look at some of the other spaces, but I wonder if that's related to the autoimmunity. Not sure. It's listed as IgE. Here's your IgGs. So this is definitely a relationship to autoimmunity, these IgGs.
Yeah.
IgAs, you know, mucous membrane type issues and a bunch of it. Oh, you got to get off your gluten like immediately. Clotting factors, here we are. Yeah, you got to get off gluten. You got to get off gluten. I'm telling you this. You've got to get off gluten 100%. Don't even be tempted by it. With these genetics, this CTLA, this is thyroid CTLA.
Uh-huh.
That's affecting your thyroid. And when you've got the CTLA with the DQA2, you've got to get off gluten. Look at this, your thyroid, your CTLA.
Uh-huh.
Hashimoto's, for sure. Yeah, I would definitely be off of the gluten.
So I wanted to ask you about the HLA 1 and 2. McAvoy seems to think that I should have further testing on HLA 1 and 2, like to really break that down to see where the autoimmune is happening in the pathways. And then there was also TH 1 and 2. You'll see it on the metabolic healing report.
Okay, yeah, let's look at that. Yeah, okay. I'm just going to look quickly through the rest of this and see what we've got. Yeah, you've got your pathways there. Great way to learn this is looking at the pathways. Let's look at the metabolic healing report. Strategy. Well, let's start with his just quickly and see if there's anything in here that I missed on the other. He has the descriptions here. And you can go back through and see which what things will help and which things will hinder.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the folate path, the folate pathway. And, you know, you've got the homozygous there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you had a whole bunch of others. So you had sub ones of that. MTHFR we already talked about. MTRR, you know, looking at... This is the first time I ever saw this was more than a teaspoon a day of cocoa when you have the MTRR. Got to be careful. More than a tablespoon a day, which is quite a fair amount. But, yeah. Interesting.
I can't have more than that?
Yeah, you can't have more than that. You shouldn't have more than that.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's such a bummer.
Yeah, and if you're not already taking activated Bs, I'd probably go and make sure you'd take in the Bs, the P5D. It'd be really important here for the CBS to pull the homocysteine down. Have you tested your homocysteine to see where it's at?
No. Okay, P5P being the B vitamins?
Yeah, it's vitamin B6, P5P. Okay. Yeah. Okay. SOD, this is super important, this along with glutathione and catalase are the three main, you know, mother antioxidants. And you do have, you know, this I don't think was shown on, let me go back to where this is listed on his chart, SOD. Yeah, SOD. So A16V, I think this is one that there's variation from one to the other just in terms of the interpretation. Let's see. Here we go. SOD. Let me do a control F, SOD. Oh, yeah, I missed it somehow. You know, I think this was usually these are on genetic genie, this SOD. SOD, which SOD was here? SOD2A. So this is the one where I think genetic genie reports it differently because this is the same one, the A16V. No, this is a different one. And Stratagene, it's the... Let it go. A16V. Yeah, so this is one where Stratagene reports it differently than genetic teeny. I've seen this before.
Uh-huh.
They're saying it, they even say it here. Let's see. CBS. SOD2. Yeah. Note, SOD A16V below is a good example of a trade-off SNP where the risk allele, as well as the wild or ancestral, can be found to be epidemiologically risky or beneficial. So really, I think they're saying the same thing. They're just reporting it differently. They're reporting it as this is considered the homozygous SNP, but it's actually more beneficial to have the homozygous SNP in this, which is probably why genetic genie reports it as a green.
Okay, so but what does the selenium down arrow mean?
Where are we? That selenium will reduce its efficiency. It will reduce the activity. Or it's, let me see.
Because I tested high on selenium, which is why I'm not taking it. And I do have very much a Mediterranean diet.
Magnesium. I'm trying to understand how he's reporting this. So I'm reading that selenium will decrease how much of the SOD is produced, as will IGF-1.
Okay.
Lipopolysaccharide, TNF-alpha, exercise. So it seems like we're producing more when there's higher oxidative stress. Whether okay. that's really is clinically meaningful, I'm not sure. Higher activity. So we'd have a higher activity of the enzyme. So I actually think that this is, you know, would be considered, activity would be considered green. Like it's a better variant, even though it's listed as a risk allele. And that's probably why the other one doesn't. So you're saying that you are a Mediterranean diet, high monounsaturated fats, alcohol are all going to increase its activity. It's going to increase its need and your ability or the demand on making this particular substance. Does that make sense?
Kind of. You're saying that having the SOD2 is a good thing.
This is what I'm reading here from Ben Lynch in this magazine.
But the Mediterranean diet is good or bad?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if we can say good or bad here.
Okay.
We're going to put more of a stress on this enzyme to produce SOD2 when you're exposed to LPS, IL, you know, these are inflammatory. Interleukin-1A, TNF-alpha, exercise, high monounsaturated fats, alcohol, and high oxidative stress.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so COMT, here's the COMT, this one's intermediate level. So it's really just the homozygous that you'd need to be as concerned about with high levels of methylation factors, and it doesn't seem a problem. You've got, in addition to the DAO, you've got this AOC1 in a heterozygous form that's going to impact somehow this DAO, but it sounds like it's not really, the evidence isn't really clear. But you also had a DAO, which he doesn't report on, but you had the DAO, which was homozygous on the other report.
Right.
And again, here's the thing, you know, you want to... Go back up here to his... Yeah, so increases activity of the gene and decreases. So let's just look at his picture. Transsulfation, which one were we looking at? We were looking at biopterin pathway. So neurotransmitters. Have you ever had issues with depression, anxiety, OCD, things like that?
No.
Okay.
No, but you know, two of my mom's sisters who emigrated from Japan to the U.S. both got paranoid schizophrenia, which, you know, the move from Japan to here kind of set them off.
Yeah, because there is that tendency. So, you know, it's super important for you to be taking good care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
On the bonus SNPs, the BCM. So you've got one of the SNPs that is for beta carotene to vitamin A conversion. You've got one out of the three main ones.
And is that suggesting vitamin A supplementation?
You know, it's interesting. This is different than what I'm seeing on the MTHFR. Because if I look at... let me look at that one here. I was looking at it earlier. It's towards the back. And there's so much on this MTHFR support, and we'll begin to know all of it. I kind of go, eye health. See here, let me just write down those numbers. It's the A379V and R267S. So I just see the one heterozygous here, which is this one.
Uh-huh.
But if I go to Dr. Lynch's report, see if it's the same one he's reporting on, the A379, he's showing us heterozygous, but then he's showing some additional ones which that report isn't showing.
Okay.
That seem to indicate that you do have issues with the conversion. So I, you know, who do you trust? I don't know. He does a lot of research.
So I have had high vitamin A levels in the past.
You've tested high?
Yeah.
Well, it's the opposite. Were you supplementing with it?
No.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, so it's typically when I see something like what you saw on the MTHFR, I'll typically say, well, you know, you can occasionally take vitamin A, unless you're taking super high doses of beta carotene, and then it's going to supersede it. But if there's homozygous, then I usually recommend that you get on a regular basis of taking it. But if you've had serum vitamin A's high in the past, I wouldn't want you to go ahead and be supplementing with it.
Well, I'll get it checked again.
Yeah.
See my doctor just to see where I'm at. Maybe it's changed, but I guess why I bring up it being high is that maybe my body's having a hard time processing it.
Well, that would suggest liver, but if this conversion from beta carotene to vitamin A, we would expect to be impaired given that there's some homozygous SNPs here.
Uh-huh.
Right? Heterozygous and homozygous. But you're telling me the opposite. So you really have to go, you can't go by what the genes are saying. You use them as a guide. You don't just go by as Bible. So the PEMT, which is the phospholipids, he's saying that he's found to be an association with an increased risk of Alzheimer's in CC and CT and TT Chinese women. But with enough choline from dietary sources, which is why I recommended like a sunflower lecithin or soy lecithin.
Okay.
To help with that. And even just eating, you know, sunflower seeds on a regular basis can help a lot too.
Okay.
FAD, TNF, alpha, this is an inflammatory one. So this might be related to some of the stuff in the autoimmune. Associated with upregulation of TNF-alpha, which is inflammatory.
Okay.
And when you're under a lot of adrenal stress, you get increased TNF-alpha. So anti-inflammatory and avoidance of smoking, alcohol, lead, elevated blood glucose. So this is a good one for you to read up on.
Yeah.
Especially given you have the tendency there. The vitamin D, issues with vitamin D receptors. So you probably need to just keep checking your D's and adjusting till you get the right amount. And this is interesting, and this is showing APOE3-3, but the other report's saying 3-4. Let's see what the metabolic healing one says.
I think that's APO3.
It does? Yeah, but the other one says you're 4-4. I mean 2-2. Like, you don't have a 3-3.
I might be on the edge.
But you see, I don't know. The interpretation in the MTHFR support one is that when they're both green, when they're both wild types, that's a 2-2, which is good. This is saying they're 3-3. Let's see what he says here. So where did you? So your GI genetics. The FUT2s, he's not even reporting on the red FUT2. So it's really variable from one to the other. You see why I like to get all of the reports to try to get a complete picture?
Yeah.
PEMT is consistent. SHMT and is related to inflammation as well. What else does he have here? Brain genetics. Sue shows the COMTs as being hetero, the DAO. So this is consistent. Mm-hmm. MTHFR, the G, these are all consistent. Which is the one you said, was it in this report that it said about testing the DQs? Or was that a conversation you had with him?
The HLAs?
Yeah.
He was talking about HLA 1 and 2 and TH 1 and 2. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He recommended further testing on those.
So a blood test on those to see where you're at with those HLAs.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not a bad idea because of the autoimmune tendency.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from there, he recommended supplementing in areas where, I forget the wording, you know, the guy is a genius. He was quite technical. But some Karazian supplement company that he has with other doctors, he said that they have supplements that can help down-regulate where the autoimmune response is going.
Hmm. I don't know about those. I'd like to see that. Yeah, he's talking about APOE3-3.
Yep.
Hmm. Interesting. That's a good point to bring up with the guys at MTHFR support. Like, why is there a discrepancy here? Let's see what he has to say about these. Here's the MTHFR, CBS, P5P. So that's what we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
CoQ. So that was fine. Your CoQ10 enzymes are fine. Tendency, you know, to insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes with the IGF-1. We went through the detox ones already. Sulfation ones a little bit. Let me see what he has to say about these. Oh, he doesn't say anything about the SUL. T1s, PON. Ah, PON1. Okay, so that one's good. Where's the one I was looking for? Methylation, adenosyl homocysteine, formothionine, so that's okay. The BHMTs look okay. The CBS, let's see. So that talks about the glutathione again, like we talked about before. So you just kind of pull it all together and GAD is so excitatory, you know. Mm-hmm. And the B6 is coming up again, the P5P.
The drama queen snip.
The drama queen snip, yeah. Yeah, there you go. You got a bunch of them. I have a bunch of those, too. I have actually a bunch of red ones. And this is all related to the B12 and folate.
Okay.
I think you're fine with methyl groups. I'd always go slow anyway, but I don't think you're going to be in significant trouble with it. Folate receptor, that one. These are all in the pathway. If you were to look at the methylation pathway with the SLCs at the top and the FOL1 and 2 and the SLC are three of the folate receptors and transporters, and then you come down the pathway to MTHFR at the bottom, these are all along the way, and they are involved in intermediates, processes, and steps.
Can I ask you a question about the NOS2?
Yep.
I did the when we did the home testing part of the conference.
Yeah.
My nitric oxide was zilch.
Yeah.
So should I take an L-arginine supplement?
You can take an L-arginine supplement. You want to make sure that you don't have a tendency to herpes when you do that. Because you can aggravate herpes, because it throws off the lysine. So if you do, I would also take some lysine with it so you don't throw off the arginine-lysine balance. There's also something called Neo40. That is a supplement that has precursors that helps you make more of this nitric oxide. And when you do it, it's the same company that makes the test strips. And so you can see the difference between it.
Okay. Yeah. I did see that product on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. The DAO we already talked about. The FUT, these particular ones are okay. Those are okay. Green, green, green. PEMT, we talked about the phospholipids.
Uh-huh.
I think that's it. Oh, mitochondria. These are always good to look at. See, so you're good on those. Maybe a little low on this. It'd be curious to see what should show up on like an oat test on the mitochondria reactions. Electric transport chain. So there may be a few impairments here in terms of making energy through the Krebs cycle.
Okay.
And the electron transport chain, which is precedes the Krebs cycle. Have you gone through the second module in the program yet?
Not yet.
Go through that one because that'll explain a lot of this stuff here.
Okay.
Okay. And then here's your immune-related ones. You know, the 14 and the SOs. Yeah. Cytokines. We can talk about the thyroid ones in his. I don't remember here. The cellular detoxification, the surface, how the cells present themselves. The HLAs are basically like a, hi, here's who I am kind of thing. Like they tell, there's a mark on the cell that indicates like what it is. And when those are off, you can end up getting an autoimmune response. See what else he has here. Yeah, a bunch of them in mitochondria. Some of these aren't that well explained. The DQ2 has to do with CD4s. So that's an issue. HLAs, allergies and molds, other immune factors. Let's see. The CD14, CD says anything more.
Yeah, the CD14 and the SOCS1, he said he's never seen anyone with those two homozygous before.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Wonder what that all means.
I don't know, but he said given my results, that I look a lot better than I should. I mean, obviously he said it in a much more tactful way, but.
Yeah, I see what you mean, though. I could see that. I've said that to people myself sometimes. Well, your phase ones were pretty good. Your phase twos are okay. It's these immune markers, which makes sense given autoimmunity.
Mm-hmm.
All these clotting factors. Here's the thyroid, the CTLA. What does he say about it? Graves' disease, Hashimoto's, and type 1 diabetes.
There you go.
So, yeah, so definitely need to get off the gluten. It's going to aggravate that. And these we already went through. I've never seen this. Must be a new section. Smallpox vaccine, adverse effects. Interesting.
Oh, yeah, he told me that I should never get vaccines, that I'm part of the 3% that should never get a vaccine.
Get a vaccine, yeah. IL-4. Yeah. Have you had vaccines?
I have, you know, for international travel, and I've actually, you know, I'm supposed to go get a smallpox vaccine, but now that I know about this, I'm not going to get it.
I would avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you need it to go to Italy. You know, if you want yellow fever to go in the middle of the jungle, maybe, but I just don't see it. Okay, so that's that. We don't have time to go through the live wellos. We're not going to see much more there. Is there anything in there that was, I don't generally run them sometimes. You know, it seems like it's all the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Gluten intolerance. Now here this, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's showing the DQ is, yeah, that's confusing. No, now the DQ is
Oh.
Red, like it was on the other. RS9275224. It's a different RSID. Interesting. Well, I went in doubt. Go towards the lean towards the, yeah, I'm not going to go through that whole one. What was the other one you got? Prometheus, I've looked at a couple of times, but I've not been real impressed with how it shows.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot there, but I mean, they're certainly all good to start to learn, right? To follow up. Okay. Was this helpful?
Oh yeah, very much so. I think you got to the most important reports.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you for submitting it.
Thank you for helping. It's really enlightening.
Yeah, and the way you learn this is just keep reading it and reading it and reading it and studying them and looking at the pathways. That's why I love the strategy, because it gives you all the pretty pathways.
Uh-huh.
You can start to look at where they sit and how things work and what the cofactors are and all that kind of stuff. Like, I love the way he does this because he marks it. So here's that folate receptor.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can see that these are all green, but MTHFR is yellow, and so you've got some blockages there. And I love how he does this. It's stuff I was doing for a long time. I was just taking his big pathway chart, which I forgot to show everybody. I just showed the little one, but I brought my big poster, my 2-foot by 3-foot. Or 3-foot by 4-foot poster, whatever it is, to show. And I would just take a picture of it, and I would just be marking in the yellow and red. It's so nice. He does this with the report.
Mm-hmm.
Really makes life a lot easier. So you can see, not a lot of blockages here, but the MTRs are, a bunch of them are problematic. And you can actually go through here and figure out what you might need or how it might manifest itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like it. There's the SOD. And that's that. Let's see, what's this one? The biopterin pathways. You got a lot of neurotransmitter stuff going on. This is why I asked you about, the tendency towards anxiety or depression or just, being hypervigilant.
Uh-huh.
The things to watch for, calming things, when you get stressed to really incorporate. That's why maybe you became a yoga teacher.
Offset by the espresso.
Exactly. Good. I'd be curious to see if you have any other lab work to see what goes on, and I'd love to see a Dutch test from you to see what those pathways are actually doing.
Okay.
All right.
Yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let's see. So we have, there's something weird that my screen just goes away. Let's go to, what's this one? This one, Susan, still. Okay, I'm just going to get rid of Susan's, and then I'll, this one's just Susan's. It's like all these things are hidden behind each other, I guess. It's weird. Why is it not going away? All right, well, let me go back to V-Elaine. Okay, V-Elaine, are you on? Find Susan on here, and I'll mute you. There you go. Yourself, and let's see who's open. Let's see, Maria. I'll meet Maria. And V-Elaine is just on the web, on the phone, so I'm going to open up your line here. V-Elaine, just let me see. I have to move the screen here, public. There you go. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Rizanari.
Hi, nice to hear your voice.
I see you years ago.
Yeah, it was so nice to see everybody the other day. So if it's okay with you, I just want to go through and just present your little background here, and then we'll take a look at some of your nutrigenomics. Is that okay?
Yes, I didn't go in depth because I just wanted to go through the nutrigenomics, but I just uploaded my last lab, if you want to take a quick look.
Yeah, well, let's just see.
Let's just start here,
and then we'll see how we do. Yeah. I usually like to get everything uploaded.
I've never had anybody
in the panel. And when you say you uploaded labs, do you mean like a lab report from the lab?
Yeah, but it's not. It's not. It's like conventional. It's just whatever.
Yeah, you know, if ever you want for, this is for everybody. That. If you want to.
Let's do the nutrition omics.
Yeah, let's look at that.
If you need to, you can look at
I might glance at a couple of things.
I just uploaded. There's just a couple of things.
Okay. Yeah. So in general, when anybody wants me to look at labs that are like from Quest or LabCorp or something like that, I hate looking at the reports from those things. I like having it in the spreadsheet because in the spreadsheet I can do quick glances and I can see it. So if you do want me to do that, put it in the master tracker and we'll take a look at that next time.
Let's just add
today. Yeah.
I'll I have some there.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take a look.
My supplement and yeah.
Okay. So you've had Hashimoto's. When were you diagnosed with that? How long ago?
I pulled thyroid when I was in my 30s after my first child. No, my late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
After my first baby.
Okay.
But that was hypothyroid. And then I got Hashimoto when I tested the antibodies. I was in my mid-30s when I realized it was.
When it was Hashimoto. So likely it was they were there before as well with the other symptoms. Okay. And then how high? What's the highest they've ever gone?
The antibodies went up to 3,000. I had up to 3,000 antibodies. And that was, I got off medication. I was taking herbs from a doctor who was telling me to take herbs. So I was like, oh no, because my T3 and T4s were normal. She's like, oh, you don't have, you're not hypothyroid. So she was giving me the herbs. And then I got pregnant on that. And I was okay. My results were. After the pregnancy, that's when I got the 3,000 after my last pregnancy.
Oh my.
That was my late 30s.
Okay.
Yes. And then I got back on hypothyroid.
Got it.
And then little by little, the antibodies went down. And I stopped gluten 2 years ago. And now I am at my lowest. I have 77 and 30.
Great. Wow.
Thyroglobulin and the other ones are 33. So it's going down.
Definitely. But, hugely.
But
the
problem was the fatigue. I think it's better too. I need to get my sleep.
Yes.
If I don't sleep enough, I can't function the next day. But if I get my sleep, and then the adrenals, I don't have enough cortisol. It went up a little bit with the bioidentical hormone, but not enough. And I haven't done a test in a while. I could not keep up with that. So I was feeling better over the summer, so I decided instead of doing a test, I decided to wean, and I was not feeling well. So I started again, and I'm much better.
Okay. So you're not ready to wean.
Pregnant alone.
Yeah.
DHEA.
Yeah.
And I take 15 drops and 3 drops.
Okay.
And I'm starting to feel better again.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to explore is my stress response right now, because I'm doing, I have anxiety. So I do a lot of yoga. I can relax myself, but under certain situations, I kind of have panic attacks, and it's kind of annoying. So I have like claustrophobia. So it's really severe. Severe claustrophobia. I hate to say that, but when I got on the plane, I sat against the window, and I was okay, everything was fine. And then a lady was obese, got and sat next to me. So I was against the window, and her.
Oh boy!
Lifted the rest, and I got a panic attack.
Oh no!
all of a sudden I felt like I was stuck and yeah. I breathed and I was okay because I had some space in front behind me. I had some space. So I breathed and, but I felt it immediately. It was very strong. So I have stuff like, and I need to move sometimes. I really need to get myself moving. So I'm going for like little jogs. And that makes a huge difference in my day.
Great.
Otherwise, I kind of like, I get depressed.
Right.
So
okay.
It's weird. Depression, anxiety, it's like little swing.
And the depression, anxiety been around
good
for a while?
I have bad days.
Okay. And do you notice any things that are happening on the good days or the day before the good days that's different from what's happening the day before the day of the bad days?
Definitely important. If I have a stressful night, I can't put it together. I need to rest.
Okay. And is the sleep issue, is it an issue of you're not able to fall asleep or stay asleep, or is there something in the household that's going on that's keeping
because,
you up?
Well, it's because I would go to bed too late.
Okay.
And I don't even go to bed that late, but I have to get super early, up super early. So I rarely go to bed after 10
mm-hmm.
or 11. Between 10, let's say 10:30 sometimes. If I go by 11, it's getting very late for me.
Yeah.
And then I have to wake up at 5:30, so I don't get enough sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to go to bed by 9 if I want to be, by 9. But it's very hard.
It is hard when you have 3 children.
You know,
yeah. Yeah, that's hard.
So okay. I try my best.
Now, have you tried napping during the day?
No.
Is there a time when you could? Because that could be helpful.
I'll do relaxation, and that usually helps.
Yeah.
If I do a long meditation, or when I don't feel well, I do it, and it helps me, but it doesn't, I don't bounce right back. It helps me calm and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like that's something you're going to have to just do.
No, I don't have time to do that. I don't think... I have a half hour maybe to lay down, put my legs up.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything counts, so don't discount. It definitely would be helpful.
I used to do that all the time.
Okay.
It's like to survive, to make it through the afternoon. Yeah, I did a little relaxation, but... And yes, I had sometimes that when I was extremely tired, that was a long time ago, that I did after nap.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So it sounds
I would do it. I guess if I feel pulled, I would do it. And I know I had time, I would take it.
Yeah, so just think about that during the day. Tune in.
If I take a nap, I might tend to go to bed very late. So I think I'm trying to avoid doing that because I get into a cycle. Then it will push me back and I might have energy at night and just be like, oh, okay.
I think it's going
to
be to find what you need.
Let's kind of manage it.
Okay. All right, so we've got some good background. Trying to get as much background but as little as I can to move on because we're running out of time, but not a lot of industrial. She's got some amalgams, is that true? You have amalgams?
I don't know. I haven't gone to the dentist in a long time because I'm scared. I went to a guy last year for cleaning. They just do like terrible cleaning and but I need to have my teeth checked.
Okay.
I used to have infection. I had a really bad root canal reinfected, and that was a long time ago, like 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's not so long ago, first of all. So I think...
Yeah. So then they treated the root canal, but it felt, you know, it was like an infection that was in there. So I was exhausted. And I do tend to have a little bit of swelling in the glandular area on the same side. So I'm like, I suspect it's kind of like an intuition that, but it's not I'm not having the infection anymore. I think I'm healthy enough to fight that, but there might be something dormant in there. So I need to find a doctor, and I think the financial is the big issue right now. I need to find somebody good enough to look at my teeth and see what kind of work. I need an estimate of my jaw.
Okay, so I'm gonna, so it's really important to ask about the dental history, because the mouth can be putting so much stress on the rest of the body. So it's a really important question to ask, and that's definitely something you'd want to look into. You can also look into, in the history taking module and the exam, I think it's the physical exam module, like around module 5, there's a chart, a dental chart. And I would look at the dental chart to see where you're having little bits of swelling and where you've had work, and see if there's any correlation when it maps it out to the body and to the emotions. So those are kind of Chinese medicine charts that you can look and see if there's a correlation there.
I looked at that a while ago. I got to go back to that.
Okay.
I got to go back and get it.
Yes.
I got to do that. Great.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're avoiding most of the allergens with occasional exposure to peanuts and eggs. Do you have reactions to those?
Yeah, I do eggs once in a while, maybe once a month when I feel like I need like a protein. I don't think I have reaction. I've had reaction to it's egg whites that I've been told not to have. I showed allergy a long time ago, maybe 7 years ago. I saw an integrated medicine doctor. He did the organic and all sorts of tests on me, and I was reacting to casein and egg white. So he told me to get off.
Okay.
I was eating just the yolk, which was good. It was like it.
Yes.
Oh, I'm eating the raw egg. I don't really notice anything.
Okay, so here's the thing. If you still do have a reaction to it, it could be affecting your thyroid. So it could be affecting autoantibodies. Just saying. And if you're separating egg from yolk, you're really not separating. It's really impossible to completely get rid of the white, because the white surrounds the yolk and there's still going to be traces of it there. So I'd be careful about that. Okay, I'll be careful, because it is hard to separate them. People say, it's easier to separate the yolk from the white. So if you're not allergic to the yolk, you take away the yolk. It's easy enough, because the yolk usually doesn't get mixed with the white unless it's pierced. But the white is definitely surrounding the yolk. So I'd be careful about that, and it may or may not be one of the contributors, but you've clearly done a lot of good stuff to get your antibodies down. Do you struggle with weight in terms of what's your ideal weight?
So my ideal weight, well, I don't think I've had my ideal weight in a long time. Right now I'm 165 and I'm 5'5". I think I would like to be 150. The thing is that I gain weight like quickly. Poof.
Yeah.
All of a sudden I'm like, whoa. Comes right on.
Yeah.
I think it's due to constipation. But not eliminate. I make sure I eliminate, but I don't eliminate enough.
Okay. Have you done a charcoal test, a transit time test?
I'm regular daily. I'm not regular twice daily.
Yeah. I would do a transit time. Elaine, I would do a transit time test.
And that will contribute to fatigue.
Yes, of course, because you're recycling your toxins. And with the Hashimoto's, you've got to be really careful about the toxic stuff that's stressing out your system. So working on that constipation, like why? You always want to ask why. Why are your bowels not moving properly? Well, is it that your liver is sluggish? Is it the thyroid? Now you have thyroid issues, so it would cause that. So anything you can do to keep those bowels moving. Okay, so whether it be enemas or extra magnesium or smooth move tea or things like that. But do a transit time test to see how long it's taking to get that stuff out of you. And that's something definitely to work on. So let's take a look at your genetics. Why is it not opening? Okay, here we go. So this is... So if we look here at what, starting with the whole process of looking at the homozygous first, we see three of them. The VDR, so you've got to be super careful about your vitamin D. Have you had your test recently, and where is your vitamin D level tend to be?
Yeah, right now it went to, when I did the test, it was 47.
Okay, so it still could use to be a little higher. How much vitamin D are you taking?
And I was taking about 5,000 then, and since I did the test, now I'm taking like 10,000, maybe 12. I used to drop, so
okay.
I'm taking 10,000.
Great.
I haven't tested that.
So retest it after you've been on it for about 2 months. Retest it.
Okay. This summer I was not so worried about it, but now I'm definitely, I've been on 10,000 since September.
Okay.
Consistently. So I've got to do my test for the thyroid next month or so. So I'll get that checked.
Okay. Cool. So the
go up.
What's that?
It should go up to 70, 80.
Yeah, with the Hashimoto's, I tend to like people to have it a little higher, especially with this VDRQ. I would probably go up. I would ideally like to see you, you know, in the 80 to 90 range.
Yeah, I was there when I took 20,000. I got up there, and then when I reduced, I went back down to 50. So
yeah.
I got to keep taking it.
Find that spot. Yeah, absolutely. You shouldn't have to keep
but
taking
I didn't keep
forever.
Staying on the 20, so. And I figured I'd try 10,000.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Let me explain, you guys, because this happens a lot, and I see this with a lot of practitioners and patients alike. You take a test, and the test shows that you're low in something. So you start supplementing with it, and you supplement until you get tired of supplementing, and then you stop or you get low. Rather than keeping on the dose, going in and getting tested and see how you're doing on that dose that you've been on for 3 months. Because if you drop it down and then you test, you're not testing reality, right?
No, I don't want to drop it. No, I'm staying on the 10,000. I have to retest because I haven't.
Right, but I'm saying you might need more, you might not. It just depends. And if you said you were keeping it at 20,000, it was keeping it around 90. You need to be doing multiple tests to make sure you stay at that level. Right? You find that ideal level and you don't just say, I'm going to stay at this amount forever because maybe that's too much. So you test 3 months later. Oh, I'm still at the 20. I'm still at a good range on 20,000. Do it again. Oh, another 3 months. I'm still at that. That's probably your ideal dose and that's where you have to stay. Hopefully it's not 20,000,
okay.
Right? But that's how we find it. We have to serially test it to make sure that the intake is the right amount to keep the levels where we want them to be.
Okay.
The MAO going to give you a tendency towards some, you know, depression, anxiety type things. So that's, explaining maybe some of it.
So, yeah, that's why I need to watch my brain.
And you have an MTHFR677T heterozygous. So you're just a single heterozygous. You don't have any other MTHFRs. But you do have some of these MTR and MTRR, which are related to the vitamin B12 metabolism. Okay?
Yes.
All right. So I don't know if you've ever tested your homocysteine to see if there's any issues there, but may not be a bad idea to test that.
How to do that. I know that's why I need you to focus on the test.
Yeah.
What is the test that we talked about this weekend? That test that has so many. I got to do that one.
The test we took this weekend?
I can't think about the name.
But homocysteine is an important one.
I have brain fog too. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So the B12 is a good one. If you do look at your lab, because for me to go find it and upload it and all is going to be take too long. Look at your lab to see what your MCV is.
So let's see what they did. WestMed.
MCV, mean corpuscular volume. And it's super, super important. In
95,
95, so you're high. So you definitely are going to need some extra vitamin B12.
MCV, okay.
MCV. I'd like to see MCV like no higher than 89, 90. Okay. When it's high, it's indications of B12 and folate. If you're not taking B12 or folate, let's see what your list says. B complex.
I have a folate at Finger's Thorn, but that's new.
Yeah, so.
I've been trying different kinds.
And why have you been trying different kinds?
So I'm taking the stone and I'm looking at it right now. It's got folate, four on drug, and then B12, 400.
Yeah, okay. So it's, is that a capsule or a sublingual? Yeah. So B12 in general, especially if somebody has the SNPs, I don't like to see them take a capsule. I like to see either a liquid, a sublingual, a liposomal, or a spray, something like that. But when you take it in a capsule, it has to go down in the stomach. If the stomach's low in intrinsic factor, you're not going to get a good absorption. So I tend to like to see if somebody has indications of a B12 deficiency that you take it as either liposomal or a liquid sublingual. You can take it topically as well. So you might look at the Seeking Health B12 liquid, also the folate, and then you can titrate your drops and you can increase and decrease as you need. And you can actually be watching every few, 3-4 months, you can look at the MCV and try to get that into the normal range. And if you're not there, you can increase your levels. Same thing with homocysteine. Okay. It's another indirect marker. Okay?
All right. I tried the liquid too, and then I because I think it's expensive, but now if I know it's a priority, I'll go back and get a quality liquid for sure. Yes.
Okay. All right.
And when I asked them to do my B12,
it's useless.
It was high.
Okay, more of an indication that you're deficient. That's more of an indication. High serum B12 is often indicative of low methylated B12. It's not getting into your tissues. It's staying in your serum. So I don't think it's a good indicator. I don't think serum B12 is a good indicator. If you haven't already gone through the micronutrients module on B12, I would highly recommend that any of these things that you have a risk factor for being deficient, that you go and study that module, and it'll teach you a lot about it.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and then the folate, I guess it was 21.8.
Yeah.
Little.
Yeah, I don't know those because I don't do them very often. So without seeing it, it's hard for me to, you know where you are in the range.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I know what to do.
Yeah. I would definitely look at it. You've got the BCAM, the VHMT, just one of them. Not genotyped on the other one. So, you know, likely you're not having a huge backup in these pathways, but there's a tendency towards it. So I think if you keep your B12 and folate status up and your vitamin D levels, that you're going to be okay.
Okay.
What else you have here? Let's look at your, and this has all the descriptions of it, but here's your.
Yes. A lot of descriptions. Yeah,
they give you a lot of information there. And we also have these charts, which you can find on the INE site. And you can look at these. So I'm going to pull this one up open. And we're going to go back to your list. Let's see. Okay. So from a homozygous standpoint, you've got the CYP1A2. If you go back to this report, CYP1A2 has to do with caffeine metabolism and estrogen metabolism. So you want to really just be watching your intake, make sure you're getting plenty of cruciferous vegetables, stay away from caffeine. And, you know, when you get some extra funds to be able to test, it might be a good idea to do a Dutch test and see where you're at with the metabolites.
Yes, Dutch test.
Yes. The other homozygous is your glutathione. And again, you know, glutathione's super important, so it might be good to consider, given you have autoimmunity already, to consider some source of glutathione from the outside. So maybe a liposomal glutathione or a topical glutathione could be a good idea.
Yeah. Right?
'Cause you've got both a hetero and a homo.
I tried all this stuff, but then, you know, you're like, oh, should I continue? It's nice to get to be sure that I need to continue.
Yeah. And when it's in your genes, it's not going to change. So you just have a tendency towards that. And as long as you're symptomatic towards it, then really is a good idea until you get your antibodies down to zero, your energy back, your thyroid working properly. So I would look at that as well. You actually don't have a whole lot of SNPs here. You've got the 1A2 and the 1B1. Both of those are related to the estrogen metabolism, right? So you've got the 1A2, wait, 1A2 and 1B1, is that what I got? 1A2 and 1B1, yeah. So you've got both of these and are related to caffeine and estrogen metabolism. So, you know, really I would do a lot of those cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, sprouts, as long as your body tolerates them, that sulforaphane. Karen's ideas that she had with chopping the veg, if you're going to cook them, chop them up first before you cook them to maintain the high levels of sulforaphane so you get the full effect of them. And those are going to help you to detoxify these estrogens. And like I said, when you get a chance, run a Dutch test to see where you're at so you can make sure. So maybe you upregulate your bees and you upregulate your cruciferous vegetable intake, and then you test it and get a Dutch test maybe at the beginning of next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then what else do we have? That's it. NAT2, which has to do with acetylation, staying away from charbroiled meats and exhaust fumes and also certain drugs that get metabolized that way. That's way here down at the bottom. Okay. And again, especially important to cruciferous vegetables along with the sulfur-containing amino acids and foods. Okay.
Okay. Well, I like them. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. You know, chop them up, and I made cauliflower mashed potatoes, but what I should have done is I should have chopped them. I did chop them, but I didn't chop them long enough. So it's a good idea to try that. And sometimes you don't have the time to do it, but the more you do that, you know, chop them up and then, or eat them raw. I love chopping up cabbage and putting a really nice dressing on it and eating it raw, or the broccoli stems, making them into a nice slaw and putting a nice dressing on it. So, okie dokie.
Yeah.
Great. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything they may want to add to what we talked about? If so, I think there's a way to raise your hand on. I think you can raise your hand, and you can also just open up your line. You have control over it on the Zoom. And if you're on the website on the phone, just go ahead and put up your hand with a 3 if you have a question or comment for V. Elaine or for Susan's case or anything at all related to this stuff. You're going to have so much exposure to this stuff over and over and over again that these cases help to cement it, and then the educational pieces really help. If you really want to learn more about this, I would go to the VLM part of the website, which is, you know, just click on one of the links on the side to take you there, and then go to the nutrigenomics section. And we have tons and tons of research there. All right. Any other questions? I'm looking to see. I'm looking at the chat, so I don't know if there's been some chatting. Let me see if I can find it. Chat. There we go. Let's see. Yeah, I've got this recording. Lynn posted a few links. Lynn, Sequoia says, everybody, yes, we can have the Zoom link in future emails. I asked my team to put it there, but it didn't get there. So we'll get it there. Lynn and I will make sure that it gets there. Okay, so Lynn put some links up. Oh, Elaine asked, what test was this, the strategy? Yeah. So I love that Susan got so many of the reports because you got to see just plain sunflower seeds. Yeah, you know, and I would do the larger quantities of it so you get enough lecithin if you're looking for the sunflower lecithin relationship to Susan with her PEMT. Yeah, and it can work. It's just the sunflower lecithin is concentrated. But if you make some sunflower cheese and make sure you keep your balance of omega-6 and 3, that's the only problem. To get larger amounts of sunflower seed, you may throw off your omega-3 and 6 balance. And that was it. You're welcome, Elaine. I'm going to look to see on... Here we go. Okay, good. Yeah, so Lynn, make sure that we get, remind Stacy and Jazzy they have to put the Zoom link in. Have to. And that will help for the future. We were trying to keep it updated in the chat there, but apparently the Join Me chat doesn't show you anything that happened before you get in, which is not so good. I'm not sure if this works, if the Zoom actually shows you that. As far as a recommendation for transdermal glutathione, Susan, the only one I know of is Apex Energetics, and it's got glutathione, SOD, and a few other herbs in there. Maria, I'm in the blood chemistry software. Enter all the data I have for a client. What reports do you recommend I run? I usually run all of them, Maria. All the patient, the client, the practitioner reports. For the client, I mean, I would run the full set for you, and I would look through it and see which ones you really want. For them, I usually err on the side of generosity with the report, and I run most of them. All right. So I think that's it. Let me look to see if there's any hands up on the phone. Apologize for that Zoom link not being in there. It was not something that I predicted because remember we did it last time right before Shine. I had put it in and we liked it. Planned to do it again and we will make sure that it happens next time. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everybody. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, Susan, for your contributions. Bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
You're so welcome.
Bye, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.